Welcome to Common Sense Uncensored with Kit Brennan, and my guest today is Marvin Lepp, and I'm going to start today with a wonderful introduction to Southtown Poorhouse, where every day is a great day at Southtown Poorhouse. Stop in for your favorite drinks and, of course, happy hour, half price apps and taps, every day from 4 to 6, and you can't forget about Buck Burgers on Tuesdays and the awesome steak specials on Thursdays at 6. Make sure to check out the Southtown Poorhouse events page and find out when your favorite band is playing live. Every day is a great day at Southtown Poorhouse, 2015 Library Circle next to the Grand Cities Mall. Open Tuesdays through Saturday from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And they're now hiring, and you'll find great pay, flexible hours, part-time or full-time employee discounts, and covers on band nights. And this Friday the 29th, it's Kiss and Company, and Saturday the 30th, it's Slam-a-Bama. And I do love my live music. And all right, let us greet Marvin. Marvin, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you today, Kim?
Well, I'm not too bad. I'm learning how to do the breaststroke again. We got a little bit of water around here, and it's snowing again a little bit, but we're kind of getting used to that in North Dakota. About this time of year, it's spring, so that means flooding. How's the weather out where you're at?
It's sunny and windy today.
Well, at least you've got sun. Well, listen, Marv, I've known you for a little bit here and stuff, and I understand that you're running for Secretary of State. So first of all, what I'd like you to do is take the opportunity here to introduce who you are first, and then tell us why you want to be Secretary of State in North Dakota.
Obviously, name is Marvin Lepp. I'm born and raised in North Dakota, originally from Lair. When I was about five or so, my folks moved from Lair to the Bismarck area, and I grew up ranching and helping my dad manage ranches around the Bismarck area. After I graduated from St. Mary's years and years ago, went off to college, lived a couple different places, Minneapolis, out in Bozeman, spent some time out in Baltimore, but when I found out I was having my oldest daughter, started looking for a reason to move back to North Dakota, because that would have been about 2001. It was still one of the best education systems in the country. It was the lowest cost of living. It was a decent place to raise a family. And the fact that you had churches and parks literally everywhere, just encouraged the growth of a healthy family. And I've been here ever since. And even with the companies I've worked for, where I've had promotion opportunities that would have taken me out of North Dakota, I've been very adamant about staying here.
Well, you know, I will agree with you, because as a teacher for 20 years, one of the very first things I always did was I told my students, here's the thing. You're young. Most of you are single and unattached. Get a good education. Get out there and see the world. Visit the big city, visit Europe, you visit wherever you can, get an opportunity and meet people and experience things. And then as soon as you're ready to raise a family, y'all come home, because this is a wonderful place to raise kids. People still drive down the road and wave to each other that they don't even know. We do it all the time. You're driving down 81 or something and gravel road, and you wave to whoever the car is that's passing you. And it's still, I like to call it Murica, small town Murica. And I love this place. And I think, like you, my heart is here. So what my next question is why running for the Secretary of State's office? Why is that the place where you'd like to be?
There's kind of a short and a long answer. The real... Like, I've always paid attention to North Dakota politics. I always have. Because realistically speaking, we're the only self-sustaining state in the country. We have our own banks. We have our own resources. We have our own crops, our own agriculture, our own manufacturing. Like, it's really a small, self-sustaining economy. And even when things went sideways nationally, here we just keep plugging along, because that's what we do. We buckle down and we tighten down and we go on with our lives. And eventually, when things catch back up again, we're further ahead than where we started. Politically, I've never ran for office before. Where I got involved was during everything that was going on in 2020 with COVID. My wife was super active with a bunch of groups, and she's like, you really need to be involved. You really need to do stuff. And I was watching, and I'm like, it's never going to happen here. It's never going to happen here. And then on the 4th of September of 2020, when the screenshot was leaked on Facebook, where they started pushing the masks and the Burley Burley COVID Task Force was going to start pushing this on a city level, that's where I started watching a lot more. And then the Bismarck City Commission that followed immediately after, like there they were, and there was this great big long presentation as to why we needed to have masks in the state. In our house, for reasons, my wife and I can't wear them for health reasons, and that's where you're like, okay, well, now we need to stand up and say something, because it's obviously going to be viewed as a one size fits all cure, and it's not. And what really kind of pushed me over and brought me fully active was at that commission meeting. One of the commissioners said, I tell my own kids, if they want to go to school, they need to zip their lip and wear their masks. And he said that on camera, and that was kind of the breaking point for me getting involved.
Well, I have to agree. I'd been unhappy with the way things were kind of trending, not just nationally, but I was watching it ooze into the state of North Dakota. And what had been sort of chuckling about what had happened over in Minnesota, because that's crazy old Minnesota. And then all of a sudden I saw it oozing over here and I went, oh, things aren't good. And when we got into the COVID territory and stuff, and they started deciding who the winners and the losers were by who were important businesses and who weren't, who could be open and who couldn't be. And they started to clamp down more and more and more, like you said. And I watched people that I'd known for decades. I'd watched their businesses start to flounder. I watched people that had no problem paying rents and stuff like that start to flounder. I watched the mental health of people that I believed were very strong again start to flounder. And I said, they don't seem to be understanding the damage that they're doing in an effort to quote unquote save us. And what spurred me on is the fact that, like your wife, I was fairly active and I got even more active and I started attempting to talk to the people that were supposedly in charge. And I got the almost the exact same answer that you got from that commission. Zip your lip, sit down and live with it. Now, in my 60s, I am going for that. Maybe if I'm six, but I'm in my 60s and I don't need a parent. And that's when I said, I think it might be time to get Mieris off the couch and start doing something. So how does this impact the Secretary of State's office? What can you do if you're going to become the Secretary of State to solve some of these issues that we've just talked about?
Well, kind of back to following along my journey, and I'm gonna find this here real quick if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
So I had started speaking out at different commission meetings. And just like you said, you're talking to deaf ears. But the one that really where I realized what they could do with CenturyCode, it was a Bismarck City a Bismarck School Board meeting, and it's the only speech I've ever followed in my life. I'd written out a list of questions, and one of them was, as many parents had signed parental consent forms, what is the school board's stance on North Dakota Century Code 2301.05, Section 12, stating disease control measures may include special immunization activities? Now, that's what state health officers' powers are in a state of emergency. Like, that line is in our Century Code. And I followed up further. I go, does the school have the authority to vaccinate these children with the COVID vaccine when it becomes available against parents' wishes? Because every parent signs parental consent at the beginning of school year.
Correct.
So once this vaccine was available, were they able to, without the parents' consent, vaccinate children?
Whoa.
And I took it even further with that. And second, under North Dakota Century Code 2307.17.1.1, section one, which is vaccinations required in order to attend school, I go, is the school going to refuse children entrance if they do not get vaccinated? Now, the further section down from that, I think it's section three, is the list of exemptions that parents can have for their children not to receive vaccinations or inoculations through religious exemptions, stuff like that. And that's where, like, you realize how much and how important our Century Code actually is. Because that's a very real world scenario that could blatantly be ignored.
You know, the fact that you're reading the Century Code to me is important because it's buried. You keep listing section, subsection. How many people are going to be able to read through this? I know I do my research, but there's a point where my brain starts to trickle out my nose because this stuff isn't really written friendly for an average person to dig through, and that's of course purposeful. But the fact that they bury this stuff and the vast majority of us have no clue as to how much it impacts our lives. So, how did you find this?
Actually, I after that speech, I was pretty defeated. You talk to deaf ears only for so long, and I'd come home that evening. I was literally sitting where I am right now, and I was whipped. And our little girl at that point, she was three, our youngest daughter. And she kept running around the house going 18, 9, 10 all over and over again. And keep in mind, this kid can count to 20 at that point without skipping a beat. I'm like, all right, God, I give up. I go, what is 18, 9, 10? And literally hit the search bar on my phone. I just push in 18 space 9 space 10 and hit search. Like, obviously, she was trying to say something to me because this is the child we were told we would never have. She's our miracle. And so 18, 9, 10 is one night the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one is going to attack or harm you because I have many people in the city. Acts 18, 9, 10 is literally the first search that pulls up. I'm like, well, that's pretty crazy. And so I went back and I looked what I had actually written, what I actually wrote. And I started looking up the Century Code. And after that, like, I went and printed off every executive order that was out at that point and started chasing every Century Code that was listed in it. Like, I had stacks of printed papers that were highlighted and noted and annotated as to how far it stacks, because you can't just take that one Century Code. So the executive orders for a state of emergency is 3717, 0.1 is the definitive, this is what's involved. Well, there's 29 different sections just in that Century Code. Inside those sections is further references to others. So unless you sit and literally chase them all the way through to the source, you don't truly understand what they are. Just like if you look at how the Century Code was, or how the executive orders were written, we were literally on the state of martial law. The only thing that prevents it is A, our Second Amendment, under the US Constitution, B, our first Article 1, Section 1 of the North Dakota Constitution, and C is 3717.1-29, which is firearms in a state of emergency, which said that even in a state of emergency, they could not take or prohibit the sale or purchase of weapons or ammunition. So literally the only thing from keeping us from being a police state was our right to defend our families and our homes.
Wow. How long did this take you?
Took me about a weekend.
You know, isn't it crazy that you have to go through it that much to find this stuff out?
Well, thankfully, I'm blessed with the ability to consume information at an alarming rate. Because even when you talk to the legislators about the executive orders, a lot of them said, yeah, I looked at them, but I didn't really look into them. So they didn't even know how far we were committed on all this.
Isn't that their job?
Well, legislators write laws. So, and then even going through the executive orders, you look at, like, Secretary of State is to attest to the acts of the governor. There's literally executive orders I never would have signed off on. 2020-05, 2020-05.1, both had mislabeled century code. Underneath the occupational therapists, they listed 4330 for the century code that was suspended for licensing for occupational therapists due to the COVID event. But 4330 is actually special investigations.
So there were errors all the way through.
So 4340 is actually the code that refers to occupational therapists. Executive Order 2020-28 had century code that had actually been repealed in 2019 under Senate Bill 2124. So they weren't even referencing code at one point. And so as a Secretary of State, I would have walked into the office, been like, look, we need to even fix this before I'm going to sign it, much less I would have had further questions beyond that. Mail-in balloting was another one, Executive Order 2020-13, which authorized mail-in balloting, but it was under the premise because I believe it was 33 of 53 counties were already set up for mail-in balloting. It was strongly encouraged that they shut down our polls. It didn't say you have to. It said that you were strongly encouraged.
But
it was portrayed as
the implication. The implication is there if you want to be a good little soldier and you want to keep your job and make everything go smoothly, you will please do as we ask so that we don't have to tell you you must. I've worked for the state and for the government long enough to understand when they are making a request, it isn't really a request. How can they get by with these errors and stuff? And then the thing I noticed about the Secretary of State's office, too, is if I make an error, they're all over me. Didn't you find an error on their website and they tried to blame you?
No, well, yeah and no. So when I went through and I finally filed for running for office, I did everything online through the Secretary of State website. Mm-hmm. At the end of your setup, it gives you three forms that you have to download. The petitioner certificate of endorsement, which is where you gather your signatures, the statement of intent, and then your financial ties. So there's three different forms that you download. Well, the second one has your signature sheet on it. And I brought it home. It would have been Monday the 14th. And I'm going over everything with my wife, showing her that I had that stuff done. I already had my statement of intent notarized. So I was going to drop it off the next day. And she looks at it and she goes, that's the wrong signature sheet. And I'm like, that's kind of what I thought, because it literally had three columns on the sheet. It had date, name, and address. There was no room for a signature on it.
Oh, okay.
So the next day when I took it up to the Secretary of State's office, I brought everything into Leanne, who is awesome. I love Leanne up at the Secretary of State website. She's amazing because, I'm blowing up her phone all the time. But I showed it to her. I'm like, I don't think this is the right sheet. And she looked at it and she goes, well, you downloaded the wrong one. I'm like, no, I went through step by step and followed the guided process. And this is the form that the website gave me to download. And so she went back and she tried it and she brought me up the right sheet. She goes, oh my God. And she goes, that's the wrong forms. And she brought me up the right forms and offered to make me copies of the right forms. And I'm like, no, I'll make my own copies. I just want to make sure I have the right stuff here. But I had already had signatures gathered on the old sheets.
That's what I was wondering.
If I didn't catch that, that could have possibly ended my candidacy before it ever even started.
And that could apply to a lot of people.
Well, actually, it did. So when I announced on Beck, I think that was the 25th of March that I was running. I was on with Lori, and she showed off the sheets because I brought them both in for her. I actually got reached out to from another candidate. He goes, I wouldn't have known. He goes, I have 700 some signatures already collected on the old sheets.
Oh my gosh.
And so he's like, what do I do? And I talked with him and I'm like, you need to contact them. You need to explain the situation. I go, they said they were going to honor my original sheet here that had signatures on it. I go, you need to get verification that all those signatures are good, because 700 signatures to be thrown out the door.
That's crazy.
He downloaded the wrong form by doing the process right. Isn't. Yeah. And he did get a hold of me and said that they did say that they were going to honor all of his signatures. So he didn't have to go back out to rush to collect them again.
Oh my God. That must have been a moment where your throat closes and go, oh my God, no, not this. Why is it this doggone difficult? And I mean, I understand crap happens and you make mistakes and an incorrect form can be on a website, yada, yada. I know it's not supposed to happen, but okay. But why does the process have to have this many steps and be this difficult?
Well, I mean, that's not even the hard part. You look at setting up your campaign finance stuff. So working with my bank, once I had everything together, they couldn't open the account until I had the actual letter or a letter of endorsement from the party saying that they were endorsing me or that I had gotten all my signatures in. So they couldn't open an account for campaign funds until they had that. They also can't have it until you're set up with the federal employee identification number, which most people don't know. So there's even steps for properly taking campaign funds. Sentry code's 14 pages long as to what you can and can't do.
Okay, now I'm going to stop you here for just a second because it's important to me, because I'm running as an independent. So
yes.
What steps am I going to, have to get enough signatures first and then go to the Secretary of State's office and they're going to have to hand me my permission slip to open a campaign fund? Or I guess I'm lost because I'm not going to do the traditional thing.
Well, once they have verified that you're on the ballot, so you will need to turn your signatures in first.
Got it.
You can set up your federal employee identification number now.
Okay.
So you can set that stuff up, but any bank that's following the federal law for campaign finance is going to require you have that you're actually on the ballot in order to open up an account. And the more alarming thing that I've found along the way is speaking with candidates, I've heard, oh, well, just go to this bank. They don't pay attention.
I've heard that too.
Or just don't cash the checks until you have your account set up. And like, for me, that's
a fraud.
Huge no-no, because like, if I'm going to be Secretary of State, the last thing I need to be investigated for was campaign fraud.
Well, see, and the minute you said that, I've had people that have been in office or whatever, and they're attempting to help me as well. And they said, oh, just go to the bank. It's real easy. You just tell them what you want to do in the account setup. And I'm like, everything else is so tough. This can't be as easy. And then I spoke to you and you kind of told me some of this stuff. And I can understand why nobody wants to run for office. They don't exactly make it easy, do they?
Especially if you've never run for office and don't have managers or handlers or anything else. Like literally I'm learning the process as we go and I'm documenting it.
Well, I'm learning it too. And every time I make a move, it's like someone's throwing up a wall. Someone's saying, oh, no, you have to go through this door, not that door. And you have to take the left turn, not the right. And I understand how you want to keep your candidates controlled so you don't end up having 50,000 candidates for one position or whatever. I get that. And you don't want people opening accounts to collect campaign money who have no intention of running. I get that, too. But it seems to me like the process has actually been set up to only go for the endorsed people, the people that are going to be shepherded through step by step by step by somebody else, and that the rules aren't the same for everyone. Because I talked to several people that I know that have been candidates and have actually held office that said, oh, well, I never got a federal ID and I never did that and I never was required to do it. Oh, don't worry about it. So is it just for us that these rules apply, or what's going on?
Well, I mean, if you're setting it up properly, like it's federal law to follow these steps. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, if you're going to run for office, the last thing you need is somebody coming after you because you didn't follow a step, because that's going to be the first thing that will happen.
Oh, yeah.
You out to dry in the media, and you can't go, well, I didn't know, because that reflects negatively on you too. Because if you don't follow the steps and yet you're running for a legislative position, how are they going to expect you to vote fairly on a bill or on a piece of legislature that changes the law?
And it won't matter if somebody that went before you didn't do it.
Yeah, it won't matter because it'll be about you.
So I'm going to do a quick ad break here for Executive Properties, and I'm going to let Paul get into place and know that Executive Properties is coming up.
Do you feel like you aren't making progress on your home projects? It may be time for you to ask for help. You should call your friends at Executive Properties and Construction. Our team offers over 30 years of experience, so you know your project will be in great hands with us. From outdoor projects such as decks, siding, and concrete work, to indoor projects like bathroom remodels, kitchens, flooring, and more, we can do it all. Call or email us today to get a head start on your spring projects for 2022.
For all your general contractor needs, call Executive Properties at 701-330-1273 or check out the website at www.executiveproperties.org. Check on the boys, and the boys will take good care of whatever you need, including if you've lost something to our wonderful flood, because I bet you there's some fences and some other things that are a little bit slanty right now because of the earth. So check out Executive Properties. Okay, you know, I think you'd be excellent, and I'm not just because I know you, but I think you'd be excellent in the Secretary of State's office, because I have to tell you, you know your stuff. You're sitting here quoting me off codes and other things that I would be willing to bet a lot of people that are in the legislature currently have no clue about.
And that's like the thing, like Secretary of State's executive branch. So my job would be distributing the laws. Like I don't write them, I enforce them.
Okay.
So I have to know my stuff if I'm going to be running for this position. I can't just pencil whip something and send it out the door. I need to be verifying. And attention to detail is key, and diligence and duty is key. And we've had too many questions that have come up over the last couple of years that can no longer be ignored.
Can you give me some of them? Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at the election.
Yep.
Let's go there. And this isn't my statistic. I was told this by a high-ranking member in the party. And they said, in North Dakota, 30% of our state believes that there is election fraud. Another 50% on top of that believes nationally that there was election fraud. You can't be the chief election officer for the state and ignore that.
They are.
Because there's a very small window of people that don't believe that happened. And our election should never be questioned. And people have asked, well, what do we do about
it?
And I actually did like a 8-minute video not too long ago on Facebook. My wife was recording as we were driving, and I didn't even know she was recording right away. She asked what I was thinking about. And I'm like, well, you know, I used to think it was a simple answer to set up voter registration in North Dakota, because we already have the list of eligible voters that are registered with Secretary of State through DMV. But the more I thought about it, I mean, voter registration should be easy. They scan our ID because we got a barcode on the back of it. They scan our ballot. It attaches, goes to the Secretary of State website so you can review it. But The more I thought about it, you look back to old tactics that even have been used recently. Union bosses would pay good money to find out how their people voted. And if they voted against what the union told them, they were fired. They were done. And with the school merger in district in Williston and with District 1 and District 8 that happened a while back, I was told by a teacher that I know up there, somebody I've known since we were kids, that the teachers were told if they didn't vote for the merger, they would lose their job. It's like, well, how do they know how you voted? Like, how would you know that this person voted this way? But that was the tactic that got used. And it's insane to think about. And then you look at the machines, we bought 453 of these machines in 2019 that are ES&S software, which is a proprietary software, but side by side to the Dominion machines nationally that have gained so much attention, their software is almost identical. So we don't have faith in the machines. You can talk to
Oh,
anybody, you can sit at any
people
corporate
know I
coffee
don't.
shop. Yeah. So now we've eliminated a voter registration for now, and we've eliminated the machines for now. And I've looked at even reprogramming the machines, taking them off Windows 7, which hasn't been supported since 2020 from Microsoft, other than for special cases like election equipment,
Isn't that handy?
to changing them to a Linux or a Unix-based software, which is a higher rate of encryption. It's a 256 encryption rate versus a 64-bit that's on Windows 7 machines. And then even there, you talk to anybody in tech, the system's only as good as the person holding the keys. So it's only as good as the person that has access to the code. So that option's out for now too, which takes us back to paper ballots and hand counts that are double verified. It's the only way right now people are going to trust an election.
I have to agree.
And to take it a step further, and I've been saying this and I'll continue to say this as Secretary of State, if there's a county, a city, if there's an election that's in question after that second count, I'm going to drive there personally to verify it before I certify that election. Because that you have to eliminate that doubt. The fact that there is doubt is a problem. And the fact that they're not addressing the doubt is even scarier. And
It
taking
is.
it one step further in 2020, when all the election stuff happened, like I made a lot of calls to auditors, you know that.
No, yeah, I sent a lot of emails. I'm right there with you.
And I had calls with the Secretary of State's website or it's the Secretary of State's office. And one of the people in the office told me that within the next 4 years, they wanted us to be able to vote from our phones,
Yeah, I
which is
heard that.
currently the rage in DC.
Yeah, I heard that. Not happy.
And I don't know about you, but I've had my wife call me from her phone number where it's a company telling me that my extended warranty is about to expire.
Yep.
So if they can spoof our phone numbers, I know blockchain's supposed to be unbreakable, but again, it goes back to it's only as good as a person that holds the keys. What's not to say they can't spoof our vote?
Oh, I would think that it would be wide open. I've been screaming to the rooftops, the canary in the coal mine, whatever analogy you want to use, for months. I've been sending FOIAs out to auditors all across North Dakota, and to a person, they all said, "Well, we don't maintain any of our accounts and our things like that. If you want to see what happened in our county, go to the Secretary of State's website." That's not what I asked them for. That's not
But see,
Freedom of Information Act.
they're supposed to maintain those ballots
I know.
until 22 months after the election. So they should still have the ballots sitting in their office someplace.
But I've been told they don't.
See, and that again is against the law.
Well, since when has that stopped people from a lot of things lately? So, as Secretary of State, you understand that there's a problem, that there's a considerable amount of people, not just those of us fashionably wearing tin hats, but there's a considerable amount of people out here that are going, my vote, eh, I don't think it means a damn thing, because whatever I put in is not necessarily what comes out the other end of the machine. And so what is, even if I had a suspicion of that, you would think that our Secretary of State's office would be crawling over hot coals to say, let me assure you, and this is how I'm going to do this, not just telling me to go away.
And that's the thing, is the fact that there is doubt, and the Secretary of State can certify and decertify the machines. So he could say, no, we're going to decertify these until there is updated software that's current, that's supported, there's that we've conducted a full audit on the entire process to make sure that's right. Like, you can't just whip out a couple videos or do a demonstration to show that this is fact. Because at the end of the day, nobody's going to believe it right now.
And that's what they did. They referred me to a video that they'd processed. Oh, here, we'll show you this video, and this video explains it all. And all the video showed me was how the machines operate. They didn't prove a damn thing.
Well, and even if you look at the company that our machines came from, all the way back in 2007, they got in trouble for having mobile hotspots in their machines.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and it's like I said, it's not whether or not I doubt that there was election fraud. It's the fact that our state doubts that there is election fraud, that there's the issue.
Now, as Secretary of State, you said you have the power to do that. Do you have to answer to anybody? Do you have to beg forgiveness from the governor? Do you have to go to the legislature and ask permission? Or can you just say, there's a problem, the office has been addressed, I'm going to dig into it?
As far as I know, that's my duty. So I'm sure it'll be a fight if I do move forward for decertifying machines, because they're not going to be very happy about it. We spent, what, $11 million? It was a lot of money on these machines.
Oh, yeah, it was a ton.
But even if you talk to county auditors, there's certain county auditors that don't want to use them. They don't want to have anything to do with them just because of the sheer amount of pressure that they've had over the last 2 years regarding them.
Now, you mentioned the mobile hotspots that were found in 2007.
2007,
yeah. Thank you. Can you explain that a little bit more as to why that was worrisome?
Well, a mobile hotspot, I mean, you can create one off your phone. Mm-hmm. Creates an internet connection to the devices. Back in 2007, there was all sorts of articles written regarding the fact that the machines had that capability. Supposedly that capability has been removed, but at the same point, back in 2020, I spoke with somebody that helped set them up, and they said that there was an update that they needed to do, that a company came in from out of state, and that they were able to update the machines on location by connecting to a mobile hotspot and download. I can't verify that. That's just what I've been told. But that's why, like, I want to get my hands on one of these and rip one of them apart, like down to the framework of the machine, and see what's all inside of there. And I want to have an audit done on it by an outside tech firm, not ITT at the Capitol, not somebody's chosen. Like, I want to have an outside tech firm take one of them apart and verify that there's not that capability.
Well, before it went hidden, and it has gone hidden, I, along with a couple of people, dug into this, and we actually got the contracts and stuff that were buried about these machines. And one of the things that, when I was going through reading this stuff, evening of my life, I will never get back, but it says that they test the machines. The company that built and runs and maintains the machines also is the one that tests the machines. And they run through their own testing materials and go, there, see, it works. Does that make sense to you? That's how they're verifying the machine works?
Well, again, how are they verifying without internet connection?
Okay. And, well, to me, it's like if I hand a kid a test and I go, here's the test, memorize the answers and everything else, and then I take the test back, and then 3 days later, I give them the test again, and they, of course, answer everything correctly. And I go, oh, my God, you guys are so smart. Just look at how good a teacher I am, because you guys got everything right. We cheated.
Yeah. It's pretty simple. I mean, that's, again, simple logic. you know? And that's the thing is like, we're being treated like we don't have common sense, that we don't know what's going on, that we don't know what's best for our state, but we're the ones that are living this every day. These are conversations that are being had every day. And it's a conversation that needs to be had because we can't, it's not North Dakota for sale. This is our state, and we need to be the stewards of our state, and we need to be held accountable. So if I'm elected, like this isn't an aspiration or a lifetime goal for me to be in elected office. I want to do my job. At the end of my 4 years, if the people of North Dakota decide they want me to do my job for another 4 years, I'm going to do it. Otherwise, I'm going back to being a quiet family man who's trying his best for his family. Like this isn't about me being somebody famous or important. This is about serving my state to my fullest capacity.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I think there's a lot of us out there that I would like to call reluctant politicians. And the reason we're reluctant politicians is because we feel like we've run out of options. And the only option we have left is for ourselves to be thrown in the breach, quite frankly. And I'm right there with you. This is not what I want to do. I do not want to be in office. I do not want to represent District 20. There's a lot of things I don't want to do. I feel like I have to. I feel like the current process is broken, and all that's happening is the wheels are still turning and the parts are flying off. And everybody's driving down the road saying, "Don't worry if the engine's on fire and we're on four flat tires and the doors are falling off because by God, we're moving forward." And sooner or later everything's going to just implode and crash. And nobody seems at the official level, nobody seems worried. There's plenty of us underlings down here that are going, excuse me, but you might want to fix that because that's broken. And oh, look over there, that's broken too. And we're being told to sit down and shut up. And when it comes out of places that have so much control over our lives, places like the AG's office, the Secretary of State's office, etc. And when they say you can't fight City Hall, I'm beginning to find out that that in many ways now is true because for all the FOIAs and everything else, they're oblivious.
Well, even if you look at the fact that the legislators made themselves impervious to be FOIA requested, they passed a law a few years ago, so you can't FOIA request a legislator.
You can't
Like,
check their emails.
why are we going to that extent? Like, it's not the way we run. It's not the way North Dakota is. Like, it's bad enough you get all the small town gossip because we know everybody. I
Yeah.
mean, everybody talks. They do.
Well, the other
And so
thing
you
that.
hear rumors and speculation, but to not be able to verify where stuff is coming from is terrifying.
And they're not even worried about the rumors and speculation. And when you can't, when they're using state machinery, state computers, state provided phones, email, and everything else, and you can't even access that to find out what was said when they're supposedly doing state business, because that's now proprietary information. It doesn't sit well with me. If that was a corporation, they'd be going, "Nah, you're on my equipment. That's my crap." Well, they're on state equipment. That's my crap. I should be able to look at what you're doing.
Taxation without representation.
Bottom line. I'm really concerned about this. I've got one more blatant profit to go to here, and that would be Biohack, your life with supplements and body care with Stephanie Kronelka and Life Vantage, a science-based company that has dedicated its time to help people reach their health and wellness goals. Products can assist with personal skin, hair care, immune system health, anti-aging solutions, and even pet health. For more information, please check out stephk.lifevantage.com or text 701-230-9306 or email skbesthealth@gmail.com. And Stephanie just contacted me the other day and said, "Hey, why don't you take a look at the website and check this out? You've got some really good stuff that might interest you." And so I went out there and I bought something different. So go out and give Stephanie a call. All right. We've got about 15 minutes left. Tell me something more about what it is you want to do for us, because so far I'm liking it.
We really need to reevaluate the system. Everything from budget to how our legacy funds are handled to what they're invested in. I really think we need to be investing more into North Dakota than we are.
Yes.
We need to be investing into our families. We need to be investing more into our young farmers that are coming and standing up and wanting to run their own farms. We need to find ways to grow North Dakota again, instead of the state being treated like it's a corporate entity and we're just a number in the book. And that right now is the way it feels. And that's not even from me. I mean, you go out, like, we've put almost 2,000 miles on our vehicles in the last couple of weeks, just traveling for campaigning and going out and meeting people. And you get away from Bismarck or Fargo or Grand Forks and you talk with people, they feel like they're being ignored, and they shouldn't be. Like, our state is a farming and ranching community. Even if you look at the state convention, the votes for party chair for the convention and the votes for between Becker and Hoven, like, I was there, I was running a running total, and realistically speaking, the outcome of both those votes were decided by 19 districts.
Yep.
And it's the 19 districts out of 47 that's around Bismarck, Fargo, and Grand Forks. And I love living in Bismarck. I do. I love the community. I love the culture. I love the aspects of it. I don't have anything against the other two cities, but as a state, 19 of 47 shouldn't decide the outcome or fate of our state. We need to have equal input from our rural communities and from our cities.
Do you think that some of the redistricting they just did could be a real problem? Because when I took a look at some of the way they redid the lines, I was left going, oh, isn't that convenient? Because I think that it reinforced exactly what you just said.
We'll put 2/3 of our legislative assembly back up for election.
Yep.
And a lot of legislators are finding themselves in new districts and new homes. And that's crazy by itself, because you look at how some of these lines were drawn and how close they were to certain legislators. Like, some of them were drawn right up to their driveway.
It seemed to me almost like they were in the process of attempting to, and this is my opinion, cleverly eliminate some people that maybe had been a thorn in their side. And so what they were going to do is assure that, because they didn't think they would not be elected, that they would have trouble being elected and continuing. And again, that's my opinion. But when I took a look at a lot of what went down, I went, boy, this just doesn't sound right.
Well, even if you look at the districts that have already had their endorsing convention, you have the candidates that were endorsed, and you still see candidates that weren't endorsed pushing forward.
Yep. It's in my district.
And it kind of makes you wonder, it makes you question. And like, for me, like, I won't speak to something unless I can prove it.
I agree.
I won't. And for me, you look at how, like, the grassroots movement is being labeled as far right.
Yes. Or
like, the media is just decimating anybody that's standing up and talking, and I'm waiting for my time to come too. Like, it's probably only a matter of time before there's some nasty article written about me. But at the same point, when I'm going out and I'm speaking and people ask me about Michael Howell or about Mr. Powell, who's running for the Democratic Party, I was raised, if you don't have anything positive to say about a person, you don't speak ill of them. I'm not going to be the one that goes on to an attack ad. And so with Michael Howell, you know, I bring up the fact that he is known for successfully running Kelly Armstrong's campaign in 2018. And he's been a legislator for the last 6 years. I go, beyond that, he has a voting record. please go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Because I have never met him, so I can't attest to his character. Same with Mr. Powell. I have never met him. I cannot attest to his character or his qualifications that make him a better candidate than I am.
Well, I found it interesting because what I did was I took a look at their voting records. I never said I didn't like them. I never said they didn't have character or anything like that. I put their voting records out, and all I put at the top of an ad was, would you have voted this way? And that's all I said. I didn't say they should be killed or anything like that. But all I'm asking is for people to take a look at the way somebody votes and ask a question. And boy, did I kick a hornet's nest. And it's ethics commission letters were fired off here and there. And it was just like you think I'd said that they kicked puppies and beat grandmothers. And all I said was, this is your voting record, guys. If you don't like your voting record, maybe there's a reason you don't want it published. Maybe there's a reason you don't want somebody to say, hey, What about this? What about that? They get on their high horse and they go, well, that's a negative ad about your voting record. Is it? If it's a negative ad about your voting record, that's your voting record. How can it be negative? Unless you did something you're not proud of.
Well, and the big thing for me is I don't want to waste time sitting and arguing and bickering. Like when I go out to these meetings, it's mm-hmm. because people don't know me. I'm literally there to meet people. And it doesn't matter how big the turnout is or how small the turnout is. Like, I'm not going to go rushing out of the room because only 5 or 6 people show up.
Exactly.
Like, I'm there to have a conversation. And those small groups are amazing because when you have a small group like that, you can sit for 2 hours and just answer questions. And away you go.
What are some of the questions you're getting that you think are being repetitive so that you know that there's probably an issue?
The biggest one is the election stuff. It's constant. The second one is how badly the Secretary of State website needs to be updated and streamlined and cleaned up and more efficient. And technology is huge. Like, I have some background in technology, and granted it's forever old, but like our entire house is completely wired, networked and everything else, and it's all stuff that I've set up. I built my own web page for my campaign, but like, yeah, it's WordPress, so it's cookie cutter, but I also get into the code and I tweak little things here and there, so it's the way I want it to be. But overall, like, you look at our state websites, you have DPI, you have the governor's webpage, where it's a very clean, straightforward, even our Supreme Court page, where it's a very clean, almost straightforward, searchable website. But then you get into our legislative website, and you get into our Secretary of State website, and they're two different animals completely. Even just finding the district map here back in March, everywhere you looked, whether it was legislator or Secretary of State website, it was still the old district.
I know. I looked. I went out and looked.
And now at least it's updated, but there was a long time where you got to sit and search. And even if you look at how the redistricting was done, it wasn't just redistricting, it was renumbering.
Mm-hmm.
So District 10 up in the top northeast corner of the state's now District 19. An everyday citizen isn't going to know that they're in a whole new number. And then you deal with the A and B districts, which are actually getting sued over right now. 4A and 4B, I believe I saw a lawsuit that was in filed against the way that the redistricting map was drawn. I think that was on the state website. I saw that state Supreme Court. So they're getting sued over it.
I think some of the Indian reservations were talking about suing too. The Native Americans said that they felt they were underrepresented and they were going to sue over the redistricting as well.
Yeah, that's the 4A, 4B.
Okay, that is them. All right. Yeah. I just know that there's a lot of people that are disappointed is too light a word, but I'll go with it. But they're very disappointed in the ability to find information. And for supposedly having someone who's in charge of a big IT company as our governor and such a guru in that area, our websites, like you said, the legislative, the you can't find out who voted for what easily at all. You have to really dig. The Secretary of State's website is a nightmare. And you would think that would be have been one of the very first things that he would have taken a look to streamline.
Yeah, I mean, it, you shouldn't have to jump through a dozen hoops to get one answer. You shouldn't. And right now we are. And it's not just my opinion. I'm hearing it from other candidates about how clunky or bulky the site is. And that's where cleaning that stuff up, I mean, being in charge of tech is huge, because you should be able to have a dry run on a website where you can beta test it quickly in a day and go, no, we need to fix this, 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 and this, and move on. It shouldn't take a year to reformulate an entire website.
You know, you mentioned that there's a lot of people out there that feel like us, but we're not in the representative districts and stuff. And you also mentioned the fact that we're very often in the media labeled. In fact, it's funny when I hear somebody do a news story, because they go, the alt-right conservatives, the basically they could say the people running around carrying the Nazi flags. It's just so prejudicial coming from a news source. What can we do to get our voices out there? Because these people, even if they do interview us, have already got a set storyline that I think they're going to follow.
Well, and like, I'm actually excited. I believe it's the 5th of May. I got invited to do the North Dakota Newspaper Association thing that they're doing here. And I've had a lot of people go, well, avoid this person, or don't talk to that person, or don't talk to this person. And it's like, if the press approaches me, we'll have a conversation. I mean, you didn't give me any questions to answer today, and we've been talking for an hour, and it seems like about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if a candidate knows their stuff, they shouldn't be scared of the press.
Well, and you come across with you cite code, you cite numbers, you give me stuff where I have never received anything like that when I've talked to people before. Basically, the word I've heard from before is trust me. And with you'll have to forgive this old lady, but whenever somebody says, listen, trust me, it's the last thing I'm doing, because I've heard it so often before and it always ends badly.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, because I'm an unknown, I have to have everything in order. I need to make sure I know what I'm talking about. I can't afford trip-ups. I can't afford to say one thing one day and say another thing another. Like, that's why when I say, if I speak to something, I've verified it. I've made sure 100% that I can verify it. And like this entry code that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. and the executive orders I talked about earlier, they're still publicly available. You can go look it up yourself and see the fact that it was misrepresented.
Wow. And that is something. Okay, we've got about 2 minutes left. If in 2 minutes, what is it you want to tell us to send us on our way?
I'm not running for this job because it's to be famous. It's for service of our state. My priorities in life have always been my faith, my family, my state, and then my country. It's why when I go out and I speak, you won't hear me talking a lot about national issues, because right now there's too many issues within our own borders that we need to fix first. And realistically speaking, we should have the rest of the country looking to North Dakota as to how to do things, not North Dakota looking everywhere else. That's all there is to it.
I think that that's an awesome way to look at it. And I think as North Dakota, we have a fairly good history of doing things correctly. And when we seem to get out of sync is when we go, well, the feds are doing this. So when we start looking externally and for external motivation and external verification and validation is when I think we've started to run into trouble, and we're continuing that too much. So, Marv, thank you so much. This has been fun. The hour, like you said, just flew by. You provided me with a whole bunch of information, and I'm looking forward to coming into one of your stops soon. And got to tell you, stay safe. Don't let anybody dissuade you from continuing on your mission because you got my vote. To be honest with you, you got my vote.
Well, thank you very much, Kit. It was awesome talking with you.
All right. Take care, dear. Yeah, bye.
Have a great day and God bless.
God bless you too, sweetheart. Bye-bye.
Bye.